Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Unlimited Realities with Lisa Zimmer. I'm Lisa and I'm thrilled to offer my two guests today for my show to offer. Good morning. I'm not sure where that came from, but here I am. I'm Lisa Zimmer and welcome to Unlimited Realities with Lisa Zimmer. I'm hosting live today. It's my first new programming of the season, and I'm really thrilled to be offering you the topics and the guests and the subject matter today. It's pretty poignant. It's pretty timely. I never know when I schedule guests how poignant sometimes the timing of things are. And this is a, and also I never know really how the show is going to evolve, because as I'm looking at my on-air studio, my first guest, Dr. Richard House, if anybody's out there listening, connected to Dr. Richard House, I've tried to contact him. He has not called into my switchboard yet. He is my first guest, but we're going to talk a little bit and hope I can jolt him into calling us in here. Anyway, we're going to be talking about some very, very personal, intimate, close to my heart, passionate subjects. The first subject is Dr. Richard House wrote a book called Between Now and When, and it's his story of addiction, his story of a near-death experience, and his evolution spiritually through that experience. Dr. Richard House is now living in North Carolina, and God bless us all. Dr. Richard House is on the line. We're going to bring him here in a moment. I'm going to introduce him to you, but first, he's a pretty wonderful, powerful, spiritually grounded soul who has addressed addiction within himself and used it to empower and support and help others. I myself am a recovered addict of 29 years, and I myself also had a near-death experience at 18 years old because of a cocaine overdose. So this is a very poignant, important, valuable awareness. In viewing that reality, that connectedness to source and spirit that often people experience when they cross, there's many who have experienced it and can come and shed a little light on what their experience was. And I find that a very wonderful, valuable lesson. So we're going to learn through Dr. House today, and we're going to talk to him about his near-death experience and what his mission is. So without further ado, actually, I have to put that on pause because I failed to mention two very important things that have touched me recently as well, and I don't want to go without making light of it. One is I want to address the passing of a very dear soul to me, Dr. Wayne Dyer, and I want to extend my loving, compassionate prayers and blessings to his beloveds and family and all those who he touched. He was a wonderful, wonderful soul, and we could talk a whole hour on him alone, but I want to address that. And I also want to give a shout-out to the family of Patty Grant, to a new baby that was just born like 15 minutes ago, Lily Diane McCauley. Welcome to the world, Lily. God bless you and may spirit rain on you. I know you're in a great family and in loving arms, so I don't want to leave without those two passings here. Life is short, man. All right, moving on. We're going to go, here we are with Between Now and When, Dr. Richard House. He is here to talk about his near-death experience and how death made his life worth living in a true story. So without further ado, let me introduce Dr. Richard House. Dr. House, thank you so much for being on Unlimited Realities today. Welcome, welcome.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And by the way, I have a daughter named Lily, and so I'll add my congratulations in too.
Oh, God bless you. Lily's a great name, isn't it?
It really is.
It really is. You have to smile. There's a happiness with it. You know, it's a very light name. So I really want to thank you for writing your book. I loved your book. It was so heart and soul centered. I mean, I felt like it was, you know, hugged through the whole thing. Your experiences are very, very poignant, and the ages I resonated with, both 7 and 33 were good years for me too, Richard. So so I want to talk a little bit about that. You are a medical doctor of 40 years. The last 20 years, you've been also a medical acupuncturist. You also live in North Carolina and very connected with the earth, but your discovery with where you are today came kind of through the back door. And like so many of us, addiction plays a role in that. And it's amazing how a blessing can come out of such a travesty sometimes. But your experience that you went through as a medical doctor and father and husband, and then having a premonition as a teenager of a experience at 33, let's start with your awareness that you kind of tapped into at 7 with your name change. Let's talk about that first clarity of experience you went through.
Oh, I'd love to. I was raised in a really good family, a loving family. And oddly enough, at the age of 7, without any kind of preparation or warning, I just experienced what can only be called the oneness of everything. I think the Buddhists call it Satori. But the experience itself, even though I was just 7, I remember clearly, and it was this feeling of being this vast existence that somehow was channeled through my physical body and form. And so in that moment, I became more than just Richard, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
And as a result of that, experience, this sort of eternal vast experience, I tried to figure out a different name for myself that would address that. And what I came up with was Ichen, I-C-H-E-N. and I started calling myself that after the experience was over. But my mother, who's educated, somewhat stern mother, and by the way, she's still alive, bless her heart.
Oh, God bless you, yes.
She's 90. But at the time, she said, "What's this Ichen business? You are Richard." So that was the end of that.
I am sure.
But there I am, age 7, and not just a kid anymore. There was this this other existence that was definitely part of my consciousness. Now, from that time forward, I was pretty much just a normal kid in California to all appearances on the outside. But mm-hmm. somewhere around age 12 or 13, as you mentioned, I had my first real mystical experience beyond that one at 7. And what it was, Lisa, was actually a message that came to me. And it's a little hard to describe because it wasn't words, but it was sort of like, if there is such a thing, it was like brain mail, where I just had this sudden awareness that I knew was very clearly from God himself. And the message was this: you will die at the age of 33. Hmm. Plain and simple. Now, of course, that's an alarming message, but somehow or other, I realized that it wasn't necessarily something bad. You know, it didn't fill me with fear, and I never really questioned why it had happened. It was just like, oh, well, isn't that interesting?
Did you feel like you had some sense of control over that? Like, okay, like if I don't wake up, I'm going to die at 33, but, you know, my choices, maybe I have some control over this. You know, spirit and I may work together kind of arm in arm. Eh?
You're giving me more credit than it's due.
Come on, Richard.
So, no, I thought, wow, well, isn't that something? And I think probably metaphorically, I just picked up my skateboard and kept right on skating. So I tucked that little message away in the back of my head. Once again, I never doubted it. It didn't fill me with fear. I didn't try and avoid it. It was just simply a part of my consciousness that was there. And so, yeah. And what happened then, I was a good student, and my father was a dentist, and I decided that that was a worthy profession. And so I got good grades and was admitted to a fine university in Indianapolis, Butler University. And it was there that I discovered two important things. The first was the wonders of romantic love. And the second was how to drink. You know, fraternities
those,
are...
those two kind of don't work well together, just for the record.
Yeah. Just for the record, you're right.
It's not a good mix.
Well, in my case, it worked out pretty well.
How did that romantic love feel? I'm sorry, I jest. But how did that romantic love feel? I mean, was that like your first, like pretty much an aha moment, I would imagine, huh?
Yeah, it was. It was my first experience of that, and I really didn't understand how powerful love can be. You know, it
right.
sort of excluded most everything else from my thinking, and...
Yeah.
As it turns out, my the lady of my affection was also a drinker, and so that worked out pretty well.
Okay, well, there's a whole nother book and story we can get into later, Richard.
That's true. It's true. So I was in a fraternity, and, of course, my interest in drinking and in love was far more powerful than any interest I had in English 101. And so I had shameful grades that first year. I have to admit that. But that factored into what happened next. At the end of my first year, I had a 2.3 acume out of 4 points. Now,
love does that to a head sometimes. You know, it doesn't, you know... Sometimes we lose sense of our senses. So, lighten up on yourself a little bit, Richard. You know, at least it was a 2.3. I mean, it could have been a 2.1, you know?
Precisely. And, I think looking back on it, I was lucky to have what I did. But what happened then was really fascinating because I was minding my own business down in the gardens, Holcomb Gardens at Butler, one day. And, I had my sights on being a dentist, and I knew that if I brought my grades up just a little bit, it would be good enough to get into dental school. But once again, I had this mystical voice that sort of came unannounced, and that voice was very clear about what I should do. And this message was, you need to be a doctor, not a dentist.
Oh, awesome.
And,
there's a great message.
Yeah, it was. And,
yeah.
It was funny because I had never considered being a medical doctor, not once, because I was afraid of hospitals. I didn't like sick people. And I just couldn't imagine myself in that role. And so it never occurred to me to try.
Okay.
But with this, now, this is important for listeners to understand. When we get these messages, and it is somewhat unusual, I have to admit that, but when we get them, and they truly are from spirit, when they're divinely orchestrated, then what we get with them is this feeling of joy.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I'd never wanted to be a doctor, what I experienced in that moment with that message was this incredible excitement and wonder and joy.
That's the intuitive voice. That's
exactly.
You tapped into your intuitive voice and you listened. Amen.
That's yes. And so I realized that this was coming from outside of myself. that there was some sort of orchestrator, which I ended up calling the maestro, that was in charge of my life at critical moments. And so I thought to myself, wow, well, you've got one hell of a job ahead of you because my grades are terrible.
But that does not mark the measure of a man, Richard.
It's true. But so I've resigned from the fraternity and all that kind of thing, and started paying attention to my grades. And I was able to bring my grade point over the next 2 years up to a 2.9. Now,
see?
That still is not good. Not good enough to get into medical school. Pardon?
But due diligence, you're creeping up there.
Yeah, I was getting close. but I knew that it certainly was not good enough to get into medical school. But I applied anyway, and they called me in for several interviews because I guess they were surprised I even applied. But I had sold encyclopedias during the summers in college, and I learned how to sell things. And so when I was in the interview, what I did is I sold myself. And they became convinced that I really wanted to be a doctor and that I was trying hard. And by golly, I was admitted. And,
awesome.
I'm not
now, let's speed up ahead. Let's move up ahead here because we have to get to the juice of the story, which is your near-death experience. And that happened at 33 after being loving the alcohol, having a great time, and finding yourself in a near-death experience. So let's speed up to that episode right there. And here you are realizing you just missed death. Talk to us about that.
Okay. I was good at as a doctor. I was very good. I had a good career, a big old house, wife, child, Porsche, you know, the whole thing. But I was also drinking like crazy. And as time went on, the drinking became more important than anything else in my life. And, you know, anyone that suffered through addiction knows that.
Right.
But there was one point where it was clear that I could not continue to work. Fortunately, I was what was called a sunbanner. I only drank at night, and so it was not an issue on the job. But one day I was out on my deck after I quit working, and I looked down at my belly, and I saw this little mark on it, and this little red spot. And as soon as I saw that spot, which is, for any doctors out there, it was a spider hemangioma. Now, what that says is that the liver is shot. And so I looked down at that, and I knew that I had cirrhosis. And guess how old I was?
33.
Exactly.
I read your book.
Yeah, you're right. So what happened then, of course, in a very short period of time, is that my liver quit working, and I started bleeding, throwing up blood. Sorry for the graphic image there. But I ended up in the ICU of the hospital. And this my doctor came in, and he said to me, Richard, he'd had my lab reports, and he'd been giving me transfusions and all this. He said, Richard, do you drink? And I said, well, a little bit here and there.
Denial, denial, denial.
Exactly.
Not only a river.
That's right. And so he said, well, I got some terrible news for you. He said, your liver is shot. You know, I was yellow, and I was bleeding from bleeding esophageal varices. Now, once the liver is that bad, and basically it's a fatal condition. And of course, I knew that as soon as he told me that. He said, so, he said, we've been giving you all this blood. These transfusions, we're just going to stop. And you should say your goodbyes. And in a day or two, you will pass. And so I said, well, you know, I was filled with so much suffering, so much guilt, and so much pain that the idea of dying was quite welcome. I'll have to tell you that. And so I said, absolutely. Stop the blood, you know, and so that was the deal we struck. And then what happened, I did say goodbye to everybody and so on, and that night, somewhere around 2 or 3 in the morning, I had this incredible experience, and that experience was one of comfort. It was really the first time in my life that I had ever been comfortable. The fear was gone, the pain was gone, and I was just wonderful. And then that feeling segued into what I can only call bliss, which is so wonderful that it defies description. But as that occurred, I felt myself leaving my body, and I could actually look at it. And a lot of people with ND or near-death experiences say that they can actually look down at their body. And that was the experience that I had. And there I was in the ICU with, bright yellow,
yes,
dying. But what happened then, Lisa, is that this bliss got stronger and stronger. And if anyone had asked me, well, do you want to go back to Earth or you want to pass? I would have said, keep on going. This is wonderful.
Right, right.
And I want to stop right there and just say one message in case I forget later to anyone that's listening. And that message is this, that all death, every death is this way, that it is blissful. As soon as your connection with the body starts to weaken, then
that's
this bliss takes over. And so every death is wonderful. And so oftentimes I will say to my patients that are in that near-death state, I'll say, dying is perfectly safe.
Well, you're in the best of hands. I mean, come on, who else could orchestrate death better,
Precisely.
So it's just kind of let go and let God there at that point if you haven't figured it out on this earth. But there's a point where, your discovery of that experience, that bliss feeling, actually transformed you spiritually, and it got you to a point, or it connected you to a point, not got you to a point, but it connected you to a point of your own inner intuitive awareness and your ability to connect within that awareness, as well as deepen your connection to source through prayer and meditation. Am I correct?
Oh, yeah, well said. Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
And at the height of the experience, it was just as you said. I felt like I was being embraced by God himself. And
yes.
Once again, I had this little message that came forward, and it was this. You will heal and work for me. And if I had been in a position to salute, I would have saluted and said, yes, sir.
Or how high shall I jump, Mr. Sir?
Yes.
Yes, I hear you.
Anything else you want me to do? So
that's
what
right.
happened
I'm at your mercy.
Exactly. That is what you call total surrender. And see,
yes.
And that's why addiction takes us many times to the brink of
yes.
death, because our egos are so strong that it prevents such things. But at that point, I was so totally surrendered that that whatever God asked me to do, I was willing to do, including going back to that ugly, awful, old body of mine. And so I did. I went back. But, this experience, and once again, this is a little metaphysical, but I was actually in a different dimension when this all occurred. And
of
in
course.
That dimension, there is healing. And so when I drifted back into my body, I knew that I had been healed. There was no question about it. So when I got back in my body, the first thing I did is start yanking out all my tubes. And I tried to get out of bed, and these nurses came in and said, oh, no, Dr. House, you can't get out of bed. And now I'll fast forward because we don't need to go through all the details. But within a week, I was out of the hospital, and all my lab reports had gone back to normal. Now,
awesome.
The
Wonderful.
Condition that I had, yeah, and I'll tell you, the doctors are amazed, of course, and so was I in this.
Of course,
sort of.
Of course, the power of God's a powerful power. Now we have about 5 minutes to wrap up, and I definitely want to include your wonderful work with your center, and I want you to talk about that because you did leave and go to Australia on a calling for creating an addiction center, and you now currently are living in North Carolina and focusing on husbandry. Is that correct?
Yes, and of course I see patients every day, but I will say that you're in Vero Beach, aren't you?
I am, and I
where are you located?
I'm just north of Vero Beach on the river, between Sebastian and Vero, and I just left your beautiful mountains not too long ago. So I, I
okay. Well,
that.
The reason I bring
that
up is I am going to do a seminar in Pensacola, Florida, in January, and if folks are interested in coming to that, they can look me up on my website, and I'll have some information on that in a few weeks. But
wonderful.
The way to contact me or to buy a book or whatever is the website, and it's very easy to get to. It's just richardhousemd.com. And the book is available in bookstores and online and, you know, Amazon and all that kind of junk.
And it's between now and when. Between now
between
and when
now.
Is Richard House's new book about his experience. It's a beautiful book, and you can find it on Amazon, correct, Richard, also?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
Wonderful. It's through New Page Books, and Warwick Associates is promoting. So you have a tremendous amount of, you know, wonderful juice and energy going out there from this experience, and I really commend you for being able to tell your story and your experience to help others as they move through their journey and transitions and oftentimes near-death experiences and just maybe want a little bit of validation or, you know, hand-holding with somebody else who's done it. And thank you for having addressed this and for your experience and coming out the other end. Because that's the big blessing right there.
Well, we're all in this together, aren't we?
Yes, we are. It sure is a journey to the fullest.
You're right.
So thank you again, Richard. I you have been such a delight, and your message is a wonderful gift for all of us, and I thank you for being my guest today and talking to us. This has been great fun, and it takes me into my next guest. So
well,
thank you so much, Richard.
Thank you for having me, Lisa. I appreciate it.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Richard. Have a blessed week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Now we're going to move into my second guest, which is actually a local celebrity here on the Treasure Coast of Florida that I live. And his name is Steve Fugate. And we're going to talk a little bit about, first, before Steve comes on, about the poignancy of the message that Steve has to deliver today. Like I said, I never know when I schedule people because how poignant the timing of things are. And I scheduled this quite a few weeks away, maybe even a few months ago, probably over the summer, actually. And I wasn't really scheduling over the summer, but I scheduled it. And it's here we are. And Steve has taken on a life mission of trekking through the United States of America, 34,000 miles, actually over 34,000 miles. He has trekked with a large poster that he carries and his backpack and his cooler and his walking sticks and his boots and his heart and his soul and a big smile on his face. And his poster says in big red letters, capital letters, love life. Now, when you see a guy on the side of the street with a poster that says love life in red, got to make you think, right? I mean, you've got to be pretty callous and pretty hardened not to take a little pause with just seeing it. Am I wrong? So let me backtrack a little bit to take you to where Steve is today and how Steve got to where he is today. Steve is probably one of the most humble souls that I've come across, and I don't know him. I've just watched him. I've seen what he does, how he does it. You know, it's all coming from heart and soul and love. Steve's had a devastating life. He's lost his two children. He lost his son in 1999 to suicide. And a few years later, his daughter was lost to a drug overdose. So as a parent, that's something that just should never happen. That's something we're supposed to die before our kids. And that's something that changes a person. It changes a soul. It changes how you think, how you feel, how you interpret and process, and how you look at life. And what did Steve do with this? Well, Steve's on a mission. Steve's an earth angel, I like to call him. I've met a few. I know a few. And I believe Steve's an earth angel. He's here with a message. He's here with a mission. And his mission is to bring awareness to depression and suicide. Now, as I started my show, there's two topics that are really poignant to me in my life that I'm working through in many different ways. One of them is loving and watching somebody with depression and the effects and the pain that you go through. Because depression is a disease. And unfortunately, our medical community and institutions fail to recognize it in the poignancy it's needed. If we could look at mental health with as much compassion as diabetes and cancer, we would change the world. And the fact that people are afraid to seek treatment because of the stigma that it is addressed with or attached to or created by is an atrocity. We would be able to stop people from getting a hold of a gun and going into a movie theater and shooting innocent people if we could address mental health with compassion. We could foresee someone a little easier if we knew the warning signs. So with a heavy heart and soul, I ask all of you listening to have a little bit more compassion for your fellow man who you may not know is struggling with mental health. And the people that it affects around them. So, without further ado, let me introduce our local celebrity of the Treasure Coast, Steve Fugate. He is a man of great integrity, great soul, great energy, and a huge heart. You just have to follow him on Facebook to know what this guy's about. So, without further ado, Steve Fugate, God bless you. Welcome to Unlimited Realities.
Oh, God bless you, Lisa, and thank you so much for having me on your program. And thanks for all those great things you just said about me. I was looking around to see who you were talking about. But anyway.
Come on, you humble man,
much.
You know.
And I like the things you said. You know, the thing is, I want to make clear right now, psychiatry, psychology, I don't have any degrees in either. What I have a degree in is a heart busted open by
the
pain. Was in both my children, lost my son to suicide, was not depressed per se. There was other reasons. Thought he had failed his father. I did have a drinking problem. And then I lost my daughter, of course, because of his suicide. So I got the double whammy. I got the pain. So what I'm about is loving life, and that's it. It's like I had to love life to maintain my sanity and to not take my own life. And 'cause when he pulled that trigger, he took mine, he took his sister's, he took his mother's. And that's what happens. And my message is, you do not have the right to take your own life because it don't belong just to you. Because if you are 70 years old and your mom is still alive, you are her baby whether your butt likes it or not. And so that's my
message.
Well, now, you know, many experts that, you know, there. I've got hundreds of people on my Facebook that are bipolar. They suffer, you know, physical and mental, you know, disorders, you know, chemical imbalances. And they love my message. I don't coddle them because I know they don't want to be that way.
Right.
And my message is love life because I know that those people are out there. There's millions of them. Those people are out there, and they're hurting. They don't want to be that way. And so it is up to us that don't have those kind of afflictions to love life as much as we can because that's the kind of person they need around them. We can, you said it just a minute ago. You said we can stop that from happening, and it's called love. So
right. That's
my opening statement. You will.
Right. And amen. I mean, it's real simple, and yet mindfully, it just seems to escape the whole big picture where it shouldn't because, you know, we're trying to cover up something that is becoming an epidemic. There are over 9% of American adults who suffer with depression. 3% of adults in that group have major depression, which is the leading disability for Americans between the ages of 15 and 44. And that's according to the CDC, the Center for Disease Control. Now, depression is increasing in America, and we have so many resources for so many inane aspects of our culture and society, but we are neglecting the mental health of our human society. And so if we can have compassion for all these other things that have very little impact upon our day in and day out interaction with people, we need to start looking at this disease differently. We need to start addressing this disease differently. And your message, I mean, you've affected people from here to the, I mean, you've crossed the country. You've done 34,000 miles, Steve, on foot.
I don't know, it's 40,000. Get it right.
I'm sorry, Steve. I'm lashing myself now.
You know what? It's like there's so many documentaries and stuff out there. They've been done at different times, you know, on the walks, and some say 30, 34, 29. It's 40,490 miles when I walked into Vero Beach on June 20th. But
oh,
at any rate, I know
Lord.
I had to sit. So thank you very much. But you know what?
God bless
you. I can't address the diseases, as I pointed out, directly because I'm not equipped. And as I told you what my qualifications are, and you can't get it from any university.
Hey,
and I don't want anybody.
Oh, that's all that matters. That's all that matters.
Yeah, but the thing is, I cannot change anyone but me. What I've done is I've changed myself to a position of love. Infomercials are wasted on me. I don't care what your sexual persuasion is, whether you were born that way. I don't care what your race has accomplished. None of those things matter to me. You are a breathing human being. I love you immediately, instantly, no matter what your affliction. This is what we need to concentrate on. We that are not psychiatrists, not psychologists, we need to concentrate on the part we can fix, our own love. And it's like you can walk up and down, you can carry signs and, you know, to promote this and promote that. You have to love life. If you don't love your own life, you can't expect anyone else to change. I can't go to Lisa and say, Lisa, come here, I'm going to teach y'all about electricity, because I'm not an electrician. So you're not going to learn it. And you'd be a fool to try to entertain that with me. And it's not going to happen. But what I know about is I know about loving life. I've woke up in the frozen tents. I've been in 12 below zero and didn't think I was going to wake up. It goes on and on and on. Those are the things that happen when you walk 40,000 miles of the United States and cross it eight times over. But And it's like, but I've been in a situation. Look, here's the biggest thing. My biggest education was having that young man, young woman, not always young, but most of them, stand in front of me, and I can see in their eyes that they are convinced that the world would be better off without them, and they're getting ready to take their own life. And I give them the love that, because I don't have their answer, Lisa, but I have learned that they have their own answer within them. What I'm giving them is the love that I can no longer give to my two children, and that love stalls them until they can find their own answer.
Right.
And it's real pure love. And you can be a psychiatrist, a psychologist, or any mental health professional, but if you don't have that caring and love in you for that patient, it's dead
water.
You can say,
I
love you a million times, and if you really don't have that love within you, it drops right to the floor as soon as it comes out of your mouth. And so no matter who you are, no matter what angle you're looking at it, and what you're calling it, depression, mental illness, whatever, it's like you have to have that love coming from your heart, or it's not going to work. And I say that because I've seen it work, and I don't lose people because it's not me doing it. I believe with everything within me, it's that infinite spirit of love, life, and wisdom outside of me doing it, because I'm begging on the inside. I'm scared to death when I got that young person in front of me. I just don't want to lose them because I love them.
And I'm sure it triggers all of your pain and emotions that you have always felt for the loss of your children. And in dealing with depression and the subtleties of depression, because oftentimes you can look at somebody and they can wear a really great mask, and you'd never know that this person was suffering for 40 years with depression. So I'd like to go through a few, a few symptoms that in my research in regard to some signs that people can look for depression. And if you have anything you'd like to add to this, Steve, please jump in with me, because, I'd like to get the message out there to people that depression isn't, an accusation. It's a disease.
I don't, as I said, I'm not a professional. Before you read these signs.
But you may know, you may see signs in people that the CDC doesn't have on their list of symptoms and subtleties.
Well, I don't know that I do. I just go with love. I don't diagnose. I don't dissect it. I just don't. I just posted a story. This is a story I tell. I just posted it on my Facebook. We never know. I was walking around America in 2004. I was in a good-sized northern Ohio town. I went in to be interviewed by a young lady for the newspaper, large circulation. I'm not going to mention the name. And for one thing, Lisa, I went in, and she was beautiful, kind of like you. It's like I heard your picture on. But I haven't seen you in years. I'm sure you're still beautiful. But anyway, she was just a knocked down, gorgeous young lady, had her act together. So, oh my God. And I was in awe of how she had it made. Well, I always had a hard copy of the interview, and she brought out great things. I mean, she had me bawling like a baby. And so she saw all that. Anyway, I always have them send a hard copy to the guy that was helping orchestrate my trip. And so I called him and I said, "They sent you a hard copy." He said, "Yes, that's not all she sent. Are you sitting down?" Well, he started reading the letter she wrote me, and she said, "Thank you so much. I have never felt so ashamed in my life. Every night I was going home trying to figure out how to take my own life." I had no idea, Lisa.
Right, right.
But she had it. A young person would want great job, great everything. So.
Right.
That's how I answer that question. So go ahead. And if I get interjected,
I totally support that, and I understand you're coming from complete heart and soul. I would like to just do a little side note here for the audience and listening members, because I know there are people tuning in who do have loved ones or may be depressed. And some of the signs,
right.
You know, there are signs, and the CDC has a list of classic symptom signs, and some of them are as follows. So mood swings, you know, it's kind of hard not to look at mood swings, but highs and lows, mood swings lasting for a long period of time, rapid speech with mania, you've got over abundance of compulsive reactive states, so you've got gambling and extra desire for substance abuse, and you have a decreased need for sleep, you have an excessive alcohol or drug compulsion, you have compulsive sexual activity, increased physical activity, irritation, racing thoughts, rapid speech, sadness, hopelessness. You also have fatigue, missed work, chronic pain with no cause, blaming others, inability to see highs and lows, inconsistencies, financial irresponsibilities. You know, and so then you have a whole, you know, gamut of blame and guilt and all of those emotions. Once the person starts to cycle out of these emotions and these actions that they've done, then they go into a real self-blame and they can't take that. So oftentimes they look at things around them to blame, and unfortunately some of those things become people. And there's a real responsibility I'd like to just address for people who are suffering with sadness. Please go talk to somebody, because your life with others will improve. Your joy and your connectedness with others will get better. So, you know, please seek help, because you don't need to feel what you're feeling. There is help out there, and unfortunately, this is a very common thing. You know, depression seems to be a growing concern, and the instability
economic
that it creates.
Economic bondage is growing. People are more and more. They're keeping up with the Joneses. Of course, depression is coming, because you're not getting that love that used to be so available. And it's like, there are some people that have the chemical imbalance, the mental disorder, and they can't get the love no matter what, and they definitely need somebody. But there are many out there that are just depressed, and it could get much worse. But just being able to feel that love, this our society is going full tilt boogie. Away from that. That's why the depression is getting worse.
You're right.
I saw the Army troops in Alaska, 6 years ago, to all the bases there, you know, about depression. And it's, you know, of course, everybody knows it's rampant in the military. And it's, you know, you can't get that love. And you said it when you were just now. You said, go talk to somebody. You know, just go get it out. You don't necessarily have to. You can find a good therapist, psychiatrist, psychologist, clinical psychiatrist. For God's sakes, go. But don't stop there if you don't feel you can. Go talk to somebody. There's a best friend. There's somebody somewhere that loves you. And just go say to them, man, I'm having a really hard time. And if they start to laugh it off and joke about it with you, go, no, Bob, Jane, whatever. I'm serious. It's really starting to get me. And, you know, and talk about it. And that's a start.
That's right. It is a start. And people need to feel safe to go talk about it. And, you know, it's unfortunate that we don't have more help out there in the medical community for people who are struggling? Because there's, you know, some people may resonate with going to a therapist, but someone else may resonate with medication and a therapist. And therapists themselves, you know, there's a... To find a good therapist that you really connect with can sometimes be a journey in itself. And so, you know, sometimes you have to start with the nearest and dearest to you because, you know, sometimes they're the ones that you have to start with and say, look, I'm just tired of feeling this way. I need help. And it can be as simple as that.
I'd like to say to the people out there that don't have these kind of problems, it's like open your heart up. It's like don't look down on these people. Don't get upset with them. It's like, you know, just love. Just love. Be the person we're all supposed to be, and that's love instead, you know, and instead of judging them. And what we can do, and if you have a hard time with it, then that's within you. Try to correct that within yourself so that we can love. Because those people that are suffering that, they'll respond to love. That's what they're missing in their life. That's what they're missing is love. And
now,
whatever reason, they can't get it. Sometimes it's right there and they can't get it.
That's right. That's right.
So
we
have to change us. I can't change Lisa. I can only change Steve Fugit. I can't change anybody else. You know, I didn't know what to do. I went to mental health groups. I went to religious groups. I went to everybody. I just knew inside of me that I had to do something about it, and I couldn't get anybody to listen to me. It wasn't anybody's fault. It just wasn't meant to be. And no groups listened to me. So I started my own damn group. I stuck a lot of life over my head, and I took a hike. And so, 16 years.
That's incredible, Steve. That's a really, it's a great mission. It's a great calling. It's you've changed so many lives. What's your plan now? Are you still planning on trekking the United States, or are you taking a rest and just kind of smelling the air?
I'm looking for a publisher right now. I got my book ready to go. I will have it on PDF form by Saturday or Sunday and ready to go. And I think it's going to do really, really well, I hope.
Oh,
and
that's awesome, Steve. Congratulations. I'm so happy for you.
Well, thank you. It's got like 350 stories, something like that, different stories. And I've tried to, it's kind of like Bottom Line, Love Life, something like that will be the title. I'm not even sure of the title yet. Or Love Walker, the Native People's. The Navajo and the Lakota both called me a love walker, which was just such an honor. And,
that's beautiful. That is beautiful, Steve. That's they knew of what they were saying. You know, it's a selfless, humble, compassionate, unconditional mission that obviously, from anyone who sees, knows, or hears of you, you just know that it's authentically true from your soul and heart. And you know, that's, you're changing so many lives, and it's just that humble heart and love that's changing so many lives. So I just find your optimism and your love and your humanitarian soul an inspiration in this world where so many people are afraid to, you know, talk to strangers. And here you are walking with a sign that says, look at me, man, and love life. You're great. You're awesome.
Creed.
You're doing it.
Lisa, my creed is to mend the broken heart while it's yet beating. And to fall in love with the act of breathing. And I was being interviewed by a gentleman, it was called A World of Possibilities, it's a defunct program now, it used to be picked up by NPR, but anyway, he was interviewing me, and I said, you have to fall in love with the act of breathing, and he said, oh my God, that should be the 11th commandment. And the reason he said that, I found out, that just 2 years before, his little sister took her own life, and 6 months later, he killed himself because of losing the book. And without, this is why you can't look at you. It's like you have to get your eyes off your own pain. And it's like Khalil Gibran said, I love this quote, your pain is the breaking of the shell that contains your understanding. And it's like it can teach you. Yeah. You got to go with it. And it has taught me incredibly so, because I let my pain, I converted the energy of those emotions to, and I focused them toward other people. I had to, or I wouldn't make it. And that's what we all have to do. And yes, mine is severe. Losing all of your children, both of your children, that's severe. But, you know, there are people who, the loss they have, whether it's a loved one or a job or whatever, that's sometimes the most incredible loss they've had in their life or whatever. And it's tremendous to them. And so,
yes,
anyway,
of course.
We have to get our eyes off. It's difficult to do, but I also am credited with saying, if you want to be happy in this life, forget about yourself. And like I said, I'm well aware that some people are not able to do that. So to the people that are able to do it, like you, like myself, it's like we have to love them. They have to feel love. And then you do that, you don't go out and walk down the street saying, hey, are you depressed? Hey, are you depressed? You can't do that. So what you have to do is you just have to love everybody. That's right.
We're all one,
that
man.
Way you all around.
That's right. You know, we are our brother's pain. And, you know, it's that compassionate heart. If you can, you know, love and you know, have that compassionate heart, it can actually transform life, the world, and people.
It heals.
And
heal,
of course. Amen.
Yeah, absolutely.
It can heal. I mean, it's the power of God. So, How much better and stronger can he get?
Of love, life, and wisdom, I call him. But for sure, and sometimes I refer to him to my atheist friends, whom I love dearly, by the way. I call it my imaginary friend, and I say, you're just going to have to suck it up and live with it, pal.
I love it, Steve. I love it. God bless you, and thank you so much for being on Unlimited Realities today. I have really looked forward to talking to you,
your
mission.
Thank you for having me on.
Truly, truly. I'd love to have you back, so talk to me when we get the book going, because I want to talk more about this. I'm kind of, you know, I'm connected to this cause, and I feel like this is a real important, you know, it's an important awareness, and it's something that I really honor and value and am very grateful for your heart.
If you ever need me in the future for anything, you know, just please call on me. Not a problem. You know where I'm at.
Thank you, Steve, and back at you. Me as well.
Okay.
So I am here for
all
you.
Right.
If I can help on any level, let me know. And audience, Steve Fugate, check him out on Facebook. He is an inspiration, and, you know, I love an inspiration. So this is a golden gem. I don't think you're going to have a problem, Steve, finding a publisher. I think a publisher should be kissing your feet. So, you know, those kinds of stories, you can't make that stuff up.
If you were a publisher.
Let's put it out there. Come on.
Yeah, I'm trying, right? I was going to start on
eBooks.
I really want to do that. I really would like to do the traditional publisher. We'll see.
Let's put it out there, because I know you've got some awesome stories that this day
they are
and this
awesome.
World
they are incredible.
Need
I,
to hear.
I have a hard time in the book. I keep crying in the story. So it's a lot of them I've forgotten. And I see
them. It's the story of angels, and this world needs to hear a few inspirations.
All right,
so, again,
please,
God bless you, Steve. Thank you so much for being
God
on my show today. Have a blessed week.
Okay.
All righty, Steve. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, audience, for calling, for tuning in and listening to Unlimited Realities with me today. I am your host, Lisa Zimmer. And I've really, really appreciated both my guests and their wisdom and their insights and their information for such poignancy and messages today. Dr. Richard House, the author of Between Now and When, you can find that on Amazon.com. And my second guest, Steve Fugate, who also will be having a book out, publishers, take note. He's got some great stories. I think there's some great inspirations in there that, you know, the world would really benefit from. So God bless all of you. God bless both you and Steve and Richard. And till we talk again, we're going to be doing a lot of live programming this season. So I'll talk to you next week. God bless, guys. Have a great one.